All right, welcome back. And joining us now is Guard Goldsmith. You can find him at Liberty Conspiracy. And of course, he also works for MRC TV. He contacted me a couple of days ago and said, hey, there may be some big stuff breaking about government surveillance and looking at the free speech issue. I didn't have time during the break to find out. But Guard, what is the status of that? Has that news broken yet or not?
David, thanks for having me on. It's great to come in after the inestimably awesome Tony Arterburn.
Yeah.
And there is some new information about what's been going on. And the Media Research Center just released a press release, and there's going to be more next week where people who might be followers of MRC TV might be familiar with the fact that recently I tied together the Portman Murphy Countering Foreign Propaganda Act that was passed in late 2016 as part of the NDAA and shoveled out $150 million over 2 years to basically silence conservative speech and hand out money to old dinosaur news media. Mm-hmm. That money went over to places like the Virality Project, which was tied to leftists through the Twitter Matt Taibbi reports, and also NewsGuard, which is affiliated with with Microsoft.
On one, NewsGuard, GARD.
that would be a great promo. I'll check with the MRC people. Just have my picture looking very mean, you know.
You have to go like Dark Brandon. You'd have to go Dark Guard
with a red background, you know.
Yeah, of course, they put it in there as part of the NDAA because it's all about national security, and everything that they do is about national security. This entire surveillance state, this police state, it's all national security, right?
Stop. I know. Whatever would we do without them protecting us from our own speech? I'm reminded of that quote from Felix Dzerzhinsky as they were creating the Cheka. And he said, the fact that you are free is not your achievement, but rather a failure on our side.
I never heard that before. That's brilliant. Yeah, of course.
Oh man.
You know, Felix Dzerzhinsky, he knew how to run an operation, didn't he? He was the guy who got the template for James Bond for Ian Fleming, Sigmund Riley.
The trust.
Yeah, you know that story as well. Yeah, he set up all of the opposition, was all being run by him. I mean, talk
amazing
about a master, you know.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And in a way, rhetorically, the DHS now has been pulled into this. And so originally the NewsGuard and Virality Project and so on, those we exposed over the past few weeks, as well as Matt Taibbi, who did a lot of the work. But I've been writing about this since 2016, trying to tell people, it's sort of like you feel like Cassandra in a way, you're saying, we're reaching the end of that rail line in this really cool 1970s movie, The Cassandra Crossing, you know. But so the DHS now has been implicated in this, the great and wonderful Alejandro Mayorkas. What's been going on is the latest revelation, in addition to the NewsGuard Virality Project stuff that was being done through the DOD and the DOJ, those have been exposed, but now there's a new facet of it. So we're talking about the targeting of Christians in the Republican Party, and I'll just read to you, literally the press release came from the MRC about 9:15 this morning, and there's going to be another shoe to drop. Now, MRC is not part of this, but it looks like all I can say is that there's more to come about the targeting of the MRC, possibly. I know that the MRC was definitely targeted by NewsGuard, because I spent weekends responding to NewsGuard stuff that literally was being directly funded by me and my own taxes going to the feds and then funding NewsGuard to come hassle me about my own articles. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, it personalizes Orwell's Newspeak and Ministry of Truth. It brings it right to you. You are actually your own Ministry of Truth. It's crazy. So what's happening right now is they've got this new thing that they've revealed called the Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Grant Program. Now, just a couple details on this, because I know this is sort of first blush information. What they discovered is the Media Research Center's Free Speech America has discovered that this was originally started by lovable, courageous Donald Trump. And originally it targeted the foreign terrorists out there. However, since Trump, the Biden administration has folded in the funding of this through the DHS to now target specific groups like the Heritage Foundation, Christian Broadcasting Network, Turning Point USA, PragerU, the National Rifle Association, for what they're still worth, which isn't much, Breitbart News, the American Conservative Union Foundation, and the National Republican Committee, as well as, let me see, Fox News. And yeah. And so what they're looking at now is they are seeing how this money, they're starting to investigate. And the one of the first areas that they discovered through a FOIA investigation is that the University of Dayton was one of the big grantees. And there are some very, very sketchy looking people connected with this. And $40 million has been handed out to silence these organizations. And I would not, I would lay some pretty heavy bets that Fox News and CBN and others are going to start forming some sort of lawsuit about this.
Wow. Yeah. And we've seen this in the past. You know, you go back to 2017, 2018, when they, and it was 2018, that was the midterm year. And it was August the 6th that they purchased, when I was at InfoWars, they purchased off all the social media with just a couple of exceptions. And Paul Joseph Watson didn't get purged off of YouTube or Twitter. I don't know about Facebook. I got purged off of everything except for Twitter. Most of the rest of the people got purged off of everything. And so we started looking at this, and then they came after another 800 organizations. I know they went after Free Speech, Free Thought Project, and things like that. And the people who were behind that at the time, this sounds very similar to this. It was being run out of Indiana, University of Indiana, and it was Oh So Me, like social media, right? Yeah. And they were running this stuff. They had hired and given a grant to this university to go over people's social media stuff. But now this is targeting directly the media, Fox News, Breitbart, other, and then organizations like the RNC as well. Is there any detail about specifically what they're doing? I mean, are they just trying to investigate them and find things to get them purged off of social? What is the objective of this?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because at first blush you hear about this and it sounds so similar to other things that you hear, and you say, okay, well, I need to hear specifics, because you know, people could just rhetorically, you could have Alejandro Mayorkas speaking out about Fox News or something like that, and you know, we've heard it all before. But what specifically has been done? And by the way, I will mention to you that there might be some bleed over to the time when you were at InfoWars, because InfoWars was also targeted. Mm-hmm. So you too might have been one of the targets. And of course, we've seen what's been done to try to silence you on so many areas of social media.
Yeah.
So my first blush response to this, it looks like they've got this thing called Prevents Ohio. And it's from the University of Dayton, and this is just one of these programs. They have multiple DHS grant recipients. There's a hyperlink here to this DHS grant recipient list, but one of the most high profile was this University of Dayton Prevents Ohio, and it's all capitals. There's another hyperlink I have to read from University of Dayton. .edu in their arts and science division on so-called extremism. And they awarded the University of Dayton $352,109 to establish this program. And I'm quoting from the MRC press release here, which promised to, quote, draw on the expertise of the University of Dayton faculty to, quote, fight domestic violence, extremism, and hate movements. And that's where this list of the Heritage Foundation, Fox News, NRA, and Breitbart, and so on and so forth come forward. Now, they conducted seminars. And again, so what we're seeing from what I'm seeing is we're seeing the money being used right now inside state universities. That's bad enough. I mean, the money being taken in the first place is bad enough. That's the moral breach right there. But the practical outcome does look like at least they've got this seminar, but what else is there? Let's see what else there is. The seminar also compared former President Donald Trump to Pol Pot. Okay. And then they had multiple seminars, including one headlined by a DHS agent that featured lectures by University of Cincinnati research fellow Michael Lowenthal, a self-proclaimed member of Antifa, whose Twitter feed is rife with posts celebrating acts of left-wing violence. Well, maybe he can get together with Sam Altman and start a unicorn for Antifa. They could call it Anticoin.
I'm Anticoin. Says, we should register that as another Anticoin.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So it says here, here is a little bit more. Going back in the history of this, they're talking about Lowenthal used Prevents Ohio to explain in detail how to create dummy accounts on free speech social media platforms like Telegram, Gab, and Rumble in order to, quote, destabilize political movements. In other words, commit fraud.
Yeah.
A lot of things we're doing are illegal, he boasted in the lecture. A lot of it involves breaking the law, he continued. Well, if he had just gotten the FBI to fund Twitter, he could have done it that no problem with $3 million. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
The Biden DHS is responsible for the new focus on the TVTP program. Now, that TVTP program was the one that was started by Trump. And let me just double check. It's called Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Grant Program. Started by Trump, of course, not constitutional. I don't see where they can come up with any of that nonsense. But then now used against Americans. Gee, what a surprise. Sounds like FISA to me.
Yeah.
It says here, the Biden DHS is responsible for the new focus of the TVTP program that seeks to silence conservatives and Christians. Prior iterations of the TVTP programs under Presidents Obama and Trump focused on actual terrorism. Well, that's sketchy. I would disagree with them there because there's been no jurisprudence on that. The grant office was established under the Obama administration in 2011 with a 12-page plan titled, quote, Empowering Local Partners to Prevent Violent Extremism in the United States. Unbelievable. Now it's just about the time that they started to push the, if you've got a Ron Paul bumper sticker or a Gadsden flag on your bumper sticker, on your bumper, then you too could be a part of that wonderful group.
Yeah.
Have a cake in prison, right?
Yeah.
The program was
through the fusion centers. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the final bit that I'll mention here, the program was revamped and renamed the Office of Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention under the Trump administration. While on the campaign trail, Biden had actually pledged to disband it. Mayorkas and Biden appear to have hijacked it for their own political agenda, awarding 80 grants to far left projects for the purposes of establishing media literacy, as they called it, and online critical thinking initiatives. The Biden administration spent nearly $40 million tax dollars spread across these 80 grants to do this so-called media literacy, including one is an organization out Boulder County, must be in Colorado, and also at the University of Dayton. So there you go. And I guess Alejandro Mayorkas' fingers are deeply involved in this.
Oh, yeah.
He called the program a priority of the highest importance.
Well, you know, when they talk about critical thinking, that's pretty cynical. They're critical of thinking. Just like when they talk about hate speech, it's speech that they hate. This is all, when you talk about Prevents Ohio, what we're talking about here is pre-crime. We want to stop this down before you do anything. And I've been talking about how from the very beginning of, when the internet became practical, when they were putting the competitors in place, had venture capital firms, including the CIA's own venture capital firm of InQtel. They were picking the people who were going to be the players, people who would work with them, and let them compete to see who the best one was going to be. They wanted it to work, but it was all going to work for them ultimately. The key thing at that point in time was to create geospatial intelligence, which was to monitor. They were upfront about it. It was to monitor people's religious and political beliefs. That was presented to everybody at the time. Oh, you know, we got these radical Muslims and we got to be concerned about their religion and their speech. And people bought that line. And now it's being used against people they call radical traditional Catholics. What an oxymoron that is.
No.
You're not a radical if you're traditional. I mean, you can't be both at the same time.
All I can think of is Monty Python and the Holy Hand Grenade, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Or the American Carol that the guys did, you know, have the Catholic terrorists who get on the bus and they've got like a Holy Hand Grenade and they pull out the pin, which is a cross or something like that. But, you know, that's where these people are. And it was Eisenhower, when we talked about the military-industrial complex, he talked about really the military-industrial academic complex. And that's what they're using right now. They're using academia to push through this surveillance state that they have out there. It truly is amazing.
Yeah.
Even with Trump, and I'm no supporter of Trump, but you look at this is the permanent bureaucracy. As you point out, these things, they just stay there from administration to administration. They may get kicked off by an Obama, but then it continues on through the Trump administration because he leaves these organizations there. They don't try to reduce them in size or scope or funding or any of that kind of stuff. And so you have this constantly metastasizing cancer, whether the people are aware of it or not. I do fault Trump for things like the bump stocks. He certainly knew about that. He went with the pistol brace ban. He knew about that. Whether he knew about this or not, I don't know, because this is being used against their own people. But it is yet another example of whether he knew it or not, of this permanent bureaucracy that has really become the fourth branch of government, the most dangerous and uncontrolled branch of government. And that's how this thing is growing like this.
Yeah, you know, and David, you mentioned the fourth turning sequences here that Ryan McMeekin brought up. And by the way, I actually happen to have his book, Breaking Away, just sitting next to me over here that I picked up from the Mises Institute a while ago. It's about decentralization and nullification and just, you know, secession, overall secession movements in history. But excuse me, it is interesting, David, because I think a lot of this comes from when you break off, when you decouple politicians, which is always the tendency. You know, we go back to Alexander Hamilton. He was decoupling as he was writing some of the Federalist Papers. He was lying through his teeth. He was saying, oh, yeah, there are going to be no assumed powers or anything like that. That's exactly what he wanted. That's why he wanted the Constitutional Convention, you know, so all of his cronies could make a bunch of money off buying those war bonds. They bought them for pennies on the dollar from poor farmers who had invested in the American Revolution.
Yeah.
They knew if they got those things and then they got the taxing power, those guys would make a mint. They'd make 100% off of those things. They bought it like 10%. And, you know, so it was massively corrupt. And that's another reason why they went after the whiskey makers in Western Pennsylvania, because they needed that money to pay off his friends. And then he got a friend of his. And by the way, I've mentioned this on my little show as well. You know, according to the Constitution, the state legislators or a governor can call for help from the federal government under the Constitution, they claim that they are going to lose their Republican form of government due to an insurgency or some extreme violence. But it has to come from the states. Mm-hmm. So if you look historically at things like the Whiskey Rebels and how things degenerated so quickly right after the Constitution was adopted by these cronyists like Alexander Hamilton, going right through history all the way up to FDR, that whole strain of the anti-Jeffersonians. What's fascinating is they never got called into Pennsylvania for the whiskey rebels who weren't paying their taxes. They used a friend of Hamilton's who was a judge to claim that they were in rebellion. And so they just went to this friend of Hamilton's and he said, oh yeah, go ahead and go. I mean, it's just the corruption. It goes way back, right?
Oh, yeah.
But when you've got these figures who are so willing to decouple from those constitutional structures, the rules that they promise us by which they will abide, and you've got central banking, all bets are off, because the money's going to go to the universities. It's going to go to this place in Dayton. It's going to go to, for example, University of Texas in Austin was involved with one of these so-called anti-propaganda groups, and they were connected with the Virality Project and NewsGuard and all these things. All of it over the past 5 to 8 years has been funneled and funded thanks to the central banks, which is they bought up so much of the debt, and it's coming to an end, as you say, you know. And the one thing that I think is extremely important for us to keep in mind is, you know, if you look at the Media Research Center, the MRC is reliant on donations from people, right? Mm-hmm. So as you know, now if you're a large organization, you're very high profile, so what happens if everything goes to CBDC?
Yeah.
And you start to see figures like Justin Trudeau and his WEF crony shutting down people's bank accounts, stopping them from donating to just truckers, right? Well, how's the Media Research Center going to fare then? What's going to happen? If we're targeted by the Department of Homeland Security, and then they've got CBDC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How are these larger profile? How are we going to survive? Right.
Oh, absolutely. So that, we know what's going on, and we've seen it rolling out. First they use their corporate cronies, like they use PayPal. You know, PayPal deplatformed me 5 months after the show began. After they figured out I was doing it, you know who I was, they deplatformed me. And I talked to Matt Taibbi at the time. He contacted me about that kind of financial blacklisting that was going on. And now, because he did the Twitter files, they pull him in and stick the IRS on him. And so the CBDC is going to be a combination of both of those things. And it's going to be more, they're just going to make it more direct. It's all the stuff that they're doing now, it's just going to be faster and more direct. That's really what they're trying. They're not trying. It'll be fed now in your face. You know, they'll do it right now.
We know what we're getting fed too, and it's not good. I'd rather use that out on a field to fertilize the field. You don't need to feed me that. And David, I was really happy that you brought up the point about the Florida CBDC statute, because and the conversation between Stossel and DeSantis, because the Florida CBD statute is different than some of the CBDC statutes. Some of the CBDC statutes don't. So at first blush, some of them look like they're banning central bank digital currency, but not all of them actually are. Mm-hmm. They might be banning a Federal Reserve or international digital currency, but they don't mention the U.S. Treasury. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. Because if the U.S. Treasury wanted to, they could themselves separate from the Federal Reserve and create their own CBDC, which they have done in the past with money, as we know, and they would just inflate it as well. And they would still, so it would be the same sort of thing. But the Florida statute does mention the U.S. Treasury specifically in that list. I did a report on that Florida statute a little while ago.
Good.
So that's
good.
One of the things. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't aware of that, but you're always on top of everything. I love the depth of your reporting.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate that. And I really, I got to say, I was so glad that you covered that information from Stossel and DeSantis, because all the rest of this is just fluff. You know, you got to get into the roots of these things. And what you discussed in particular, as you and I know, because we have some really interesting thoughts going, and we've never really been able to like spend a lot of time talking about it, but the idea of asking for incorporation status and how that affects your ability to be able to be free to claim that your business is still private property, mm-hmm. or it can be regulated by the government. There's so many facets to that are very, very important for people to keep in mind. And a lot of them are addressable, I think, by the idea of making sure that people recognize that corporate status is an artificial government blessing onto people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in the Constitution that actually allows that. So there's a lot to discuss with that. And the problem that I see is that if people start to accept the idea that corporations, by asking for incorporation status, it opens the door to having the government. So for example, let's look at it this way. If somebody says, like Stossel looks at it as, well, it's just a private business, which not quite, right?
Right.
But if someone says, well, it's not just a private business, should this corporation then be able to force everybody to get jabbed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, to me, that would be whether or not it's in the original contract. And the problem is you have to separate the corporate status from the contract status. Is there defraud? Is there breach of contract? Are you going against what the original contract was? And that goes for anybody who's making an arrangement, walking into a store and so on. But not to get too in the weeds on this, but one of the things that I think is important is to say, look, by trying to answer the problem of a business forcing the employee to do something that might run counter to what we would see as acceptable, say having to wear a mask or accept LGBTQ stuff or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. We are actually answering the problem by perpetuating the problem, which is that by saying, well, you're a corporation and you can't discriminate against X, Y, or Z person, you're then saying, well, you are a corporation and you must answer to the government diktats.
Yeah.
So in a way, it actually does a backdoor opening to the government saying you must jab people. That's you right. must wear masks. And there's no answer
the
there.
Thing. I think that's the key thing, because people have looked at this and typically, like I say, you know, we have situations saying, well, you're not going to discriminate against somebody based on the color of their skin. And so you're going to open up. You got a public space here. You're going to serve everybody equally. And we understand that. And then you get into these fine issues like, you know, the gay wedding cake or whatever, where they came in and he said, look, I'm a bakery. I sell stuff off the shelf to anybody. I don't ask anything, any questions about them. But if you want me to custom make something for you because this is a domination thing and you know that this is my religious beliefs and you're trying to rub my nose in the cake, well, I'm not going to do that. And so, you know, there's these different nuances that are there. But I think most people are coming at this from the standpoint of, is this a private business that's going to, is doing this out of their own bigotry or hatred of a group or whatever? And that's people's mindset with it. When in reality, they're doing it on behalf of the state in many of these cases, right? And that's the key thing. And you got to cut through that BS and our background of all this saying, well, you know, they don't want to have black people at the counter. And so it's not about that. It's about these people doing it on behalf of the state. And that's really why you had the cruise ships doing that, you know, in Florida and that type of thing. It wasn't that, you know, they have some hatred of people who aren't vaccinated or not wearing a mask. It's because they're agents of the state doing this and giving the state some kind of plausible deniability. Well, we're not really doing it. We're not really censoring your speech. It's the social media companies that are doing it. No, you're their agents.
That's exactly, David. Yeah, I think anybody who thinks that they can use the government to prevent the businesses from, say, establishing rules that they don't like has to admit that they can use the government can then be used to establish rules that they don't like. And this is this is the major problem, that invasion of private property. And it literally, if you separate the corporate the request for corporate status from it, and you look at just philosophically and historically, the roots of the problem go all the way back to John Locke. And I would have my students up on the board, and we would go through the second treatise of government, and I would ask them to point out areas where John Locke was offering double standards, or he was illogically falling apart. And there are two areas where Locke had it wrong. Very, very wrong. There were a number of areas where he had it wrong. People often claim that John Locke was a natural rights theorist. He wasn't. He was a social contract theorist. He was claiming that everybody signed on to this magical social contract. And that's, you know, again, it runs parallel to this idea of, do I have a private business or do I not? Now, so what Locke said was, no man should be deprived of the fruits of his labor without his consent. And then literally in the very next sentence, John Locke says, and by his consent, I mean the consent of the majority. So he negates his own argument. It's a QED, right? And then the other part of it is he said private property should essentially be sacrosanct. But by the same token, he also would say, yeah, but you can't waste your private property. Well, who defines waste, right? If I allow a couple apples to fall in my apple field, is that waste to you? And then he says, if you waste it, then you have to give it up to somebody else. It's like, no, now you are establishing yourself as the arbiter of what is waste. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. And this is the problem. Now, when you open up that door, and this is where the DeSantis-Stossel conversation becomes so dynamic and so interesting and opens up such a great door to learning. Because, you know, Stossel's position, and you rightly say it, if Stossel had just opened up that extra dimension to say, ah, I know we're actually talking about people asking for incorporation status. Mm-hmm. Then you got to say, when you're asking for incorporation status, are you then becoming an agent of the state?
Yeah.
And how far does that go? And then that draws in even more complex stuff, which is what are called unconstitutional conditions.
Yep.
And unconstitutional conditions have been ruled on over and over again in various ways. As you know, Hillsdale College, Grove City College, the federal government tried to force them to conform to Title IX if they took any students who got government grants. They said, we're private. And they said, no, if you're taking government money. By the same token, there was the Cabrini Green housing unit, which, by the way, I think Tony might have mentioned this, or maybe it was Don Jeffries mentioned this. Michelle Obama was involved in the tearing down of the Cabrini Green housing complex outside of Chicago. That was one of her big claims to fame. But Cabrini Green was a Title 8, Section 8 housing complex where they had a child who got killed out in the parking lot back in the early 80s, I think it was. Mm-hmm. It was a drug deal. And a little kid got hit in crossfire, lost his life. So they said, we are going to stipulate that if you're going to get this federal housing benefit, you must accept no-knock raids in your apartments for searches, completely contrary to the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
So in that case, the Supreme Court ruled, no, you can't do that. You can't stipulate that someone has to open up their doors to no-knock raids. People still have their Bill of Rights protected rights.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got Christian bake shops. I want to ask for incorporation status. So again, similar to what those people with Cabrini Green were doing, I'm asking for a government benefit. Give me this housing, give me this corporate status, right? Give me the legal protections against my own assets if I form a corporation. Mm-hmm. So let's say you form a corporation, an LLC or something like that. Does that then mean that the government can tell you to do all these things that run contrary to your rights?
Yeah.
And so the heart of the problem is the state. It's always the state. And the ability to incorporate should have nothing to do with the state. And that's the problem, because the minute you get the state involved, then all these questions arises. What can the state demand for your beneficence, for the beneficence of granting you this corporate status?
And that's, we see that problem in spades when it comes to private schools and school vouchers and all the rest of this stuff. You know, even in that discussion with John Stossel, and they're talking about, well, you know, what about a private school? Well, private school can do whatever they want, but if the taxpayers are paying for it, we're going to tell them what to do. And of course, that is always going to be the case. And so when you have so many Republicans out there saying, well, we got to have vouchers and we got to use them for private schools. And they've tried to draw homeschoolers in by saying, well, we got these great athletic programs that you can get involved in or band or whatever. But it's going to be a way that they claw their way in once you take that. And that's the thing that people have a real blind side about. I remember up until you had the Twitter files that were released by, you know, Musk and Taibbi and these other people were looking at it. The tack that had been taken by Reason Magazine, by the Cato Institute, by the Heritage Foundation, all these other people were that, well, they're corporations, they can do whatever they want. I don't like what they're doing. As a matter of fact, John Stossel said it many times. I really hate the fact they're censoring me, he said, and I hate what they're doing, but they're entitled to do it because they're corporations. And I kept saying at the time, no, they're working on behalf of the government, and they would not acknowledge it until these Twitter files came out.
Right,
and
right.
That was the best thing, I think, that came out of it, was it kind of started to open their eyes as like, oh, there was a hidden hand behind all of this stuff.
Yes, and you were way ahead. And I have to say, David, you know, as a person who I know you were a fan of British television and so on and so forth, the anti-corporate left wing of the Brits, their population, they were way ahead of me. And, you know, I often mention there's a band called Killing Joke, and I met their lead singer and so on. And he's a symphonic composer. He's worked with Sarah Brightman and things like that. And he owns an island off the coast of New Zealand now. He's done very, very well.
Wow.
He was the Prague Philharmonic composer and so on. But, you know, he started basically squatting in a house as a teenager with other members of Killing Joke, along with The Clash and Motorhead.
Wow.
In one building outside of London. and he, you know, he's gone to this prominence, but he and I were having a conversation because in his songs, he will quote the Georgia Guidestones. He literally, I might have mentioned to you, he literally wrote a song years before the pandemic nonsense started called "I Am the Virus," dig on Bertrand Russell and H.G. Wells. He was talking about Codex Alimentarius from the EU 2.5 years before it was proposed. Like he knows. So he said to me, and I've mentioned this on my show as well, he's got a really deep voice. He said, you know, God, when I formed Killing Joke, a lot of this was very abstract. It was very, very, you know, I was just learning about the Illuminati and their influences through banking and corporations. Because now we know these people. My drummer repairs paintings for David Rockefeller. We're in their homes because they really want this stuff. They want one world currency. They want to reduce the population. And he had always been railing against the corporate fascist stuff. And you were right on it. And that's where the reason people were off it a little bit by a couple years at least. And maybe they'll be able to maintain it. Maybe Nick Gillespie has learned a little bit and some of the other guys there. I think they were always aware of it, but they just never really got around to really digging into it. But you dug into it beautifully. And this is one of the major problems. When you've got a central banking system, what they're trying to do is forget the customers. Customers don't need to be pleased. Competition has nothing to do with it now. Just go to the central authority, go to the digital money, and you'll be all set. You'll be fine. If you're a green corporation and you're failing, it doesn't matter. We're going to continue to fund you. Yeah. We're going to have solar panels galore. Even if there's not enough ore out there to create a battery, we're going to pretend that there is, and you're going to get a lot of money, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the way they're coming after everything online, you got an article, Earn It, the Earn It Bill.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Earn It Bill and online privacy. What is that about with Lindsey Graham? You're going to have to earn your position on the internet, right?
Oh, man. Good old Lindsey. Good old Lindsey. All right. Yeah. So the Earn It Bill, that one, and it's all tied into, there's a Senate version, there's a House version of this. And the Senate version is very, very close to a floor vote. It's SB 3538, and it just came out of the Judiciary Committee, or if you ride the metro in Washington, it's called the Judiciary. I love the accent that they have there. But originally it was proposed in 2020 by Lindsey Graham, and it went nowhere. But the great hero of Vietnam, Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, reintroduced it. Of course, after he actually never went to Vietnam and did any actual action there. And then he was exposed for it. So the Earn It Act essentially has to do with Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act. And within that, what they did was, and again, you know, this is all predicated on an illegitimate assumption of U.S. power in one area and a legitimate assumption of U.S. power in another area. So I'll go with the legitimate assumption first. The legitimate, well, under their constitution, as a Christian anarchist, I don't necessarily agree that the constitution is a valid document for me. It's been foisted on me, but I would at least ask those guys to conform to it if they promise they're going to conform act by it.
As a condition of their authority. They signed their name to the social contract, but you can't find your signature there.
yeah, exactly. So under the Constitution, as you know, the Congress can create the court system above the state Supreme Courts and below the federal Supreme Courts. So the entire circuit court system and federal district court systems and so on, those are all creations by Congress. And as such, Congress can then block certain types of cases from getting into those courts. So for example, in 2005, they had the Legal Transactions and Firearms Act that they put forward that Biden wants to just eliminate, right? So you can't have lawsuits for liability and malfunctioning of guns, claiming that they malfunctioned just because someone shot someone else. So they blocked those liability suits. In a similar way, what the 96 Communications Decency Act did was it blocks two things. It blocks the states from being able to bring action for what they call child sexual abuse material, child porn. The states can't take action against internet service providers or social media sites or so on if the FCC claims, and this is where the unconstitutional aspect of it comes in, because the FCC is massively unconstitutional. If the FCC determines that the online host curated the material in what they call good faith. Now, of course, that's very subjective. It leaves them the power to say, well, you didn't do it in good faith. That's their power grab.
Yeah.
But what this new thing would do is it would remove that assumption for any ISP or any social media site that allowed people to use cryptography or any type of like a code key.
So you're essentially guilty until you prove that you've earned it.
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially what it will do is incentivize anybody to say, look, we could be shut down immediately if you don't give us the codes, if you don't give us your your encryption codes. And then they will give these people liability protection, just like they did after the Snowden revelations about, you know, the Verizon wiretapping and the NSA and James Clapper saying, not knowingly in front of Wyden, right?
Yeah, right.
So what they'll do is they'll give indemnification to these corporations if they turn over the encryption keys. So basically what they're trying to do is a backdoor way to not only stifle speech, but to shut down crypto communications,
yes,
cryptocurrency. So that's what the Earn It bill is. And essentially it would just make it impossible for people to do any sort of interaction online with encryption unless they go super, super, you know, underground web.
Well, you know, we see them coming after crypto in so many subtle, devious ways. You know, the Earn It Act is one of them. Restrict is another one. You know, when they come in and then say, well, if we have deemed an entity, who might they have in mind, you know, a foreign cryptocurrency exchange or something. If we deem them to be a bad actor, and you deal with them, you're going to get a massive fine. And then if you use a VPN so that we can't see that you're doing it, but we find out somehow anyway, then we're going to come after you with $1 million fine. You know that this is about crypto. You know that it's about the cryptocurrency because that's what they're trying to chop down. So it's amazing to me to see all the different tentacles that are coming out of the federal government, you know, trying to wrap its way around crypto to strangle it. And it's just another one of these things, really, the Earn It bill. I mean,
yeah. And David, you know, I think part of the problem is that there's so much information coming around that it becomes hard to juggle all the little balls, you know? So you've got Matt Taibbi's work has just been stellar. Excellent, excellent work. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the other facets of that, which are the emotional sides of them testifying in front of Congress and then him being attacked by the IRS. So you've got that additional information. Mm-hmm. You've got the Earn It Act. You've got the Restrict Act. You've got this new information from MRC. And evidently, from what I'm hearing, MRC is going to be, so then you've got NewsGuard, you've got the Virality Project, you've got the Portman Murphy stuff. So, you know, I'm familiar with this because I've been working with this for a number of years. And, you know, I spent hours over the weekends sometimes responding to idiotic emails from NewsGuard. And all they would have to have done was just hit the hyperlinks in my articles and they would find that everything's verified, mm-hmm. especially my climate change stuff. That I wrote a 3,000 word response to NewsGuard a year ago because they didn't click hyperlinks in my pieces. Wow. And it was all there. I mean, it's just infuriating to think about what they're doing to not only me, but to my friends. You know, Eric Schiner, he's got a family. Yeah. He could, you know, it's so stupid.
Explain to me why, because I haven't had any interaction with NewsGuard. So you're writing an article. And they send you a thing and they're threatening to take some kind of an action if you don't explain yourself to them. What kind of an action are they threatening?
Yeah, well, what happens is, so NewsGuard, it's one of these things where advertisers on websites can go to NewsGuard as a so-called service. And because they're, exactly.
Microsoft owns that.
Exactly. Because they're connected to Microsoft, they have massive clout for the advertisers to say, well, if you get the green check on your website, you're seen as a trusted news provider. Uh-huh. And it goes way back to that whole thing of prop or not back in 2017. So there's such a long history of because they're never going to stop. They're never going to stop trying to demonize people and broad brush people and trying to label them in this gaslighting way of you're the bad guys. And if you speak up against us, now you're dangerous.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? So NewsGuard, they are this constant stream of nigglers and sort of officious people who they basically will send emails out just to waste your time.
Yeah.
And
so it's you want to keep the status with them,
yeah,
an approved status, or they'll shut down advertising to you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They'll take you off their preferred advertiser list. And that's, you know, for anybody, especially like the Media Research Center, that's a big deal because they're all donations. Yeah. So it's tough. You know, it gets very, very difficult. And so the News Guard forces out there are, you know, they paint themselves as these polished paladins in their armor, you know, like Mick Jagger, you know, on a fine Arab charger, you know.
Yeah.
but they're not. They're just propagandists themselves, and this is part of the problem where, you know, it goes way back to the assumption by the big three media networks that they were the news, that Walter Cronkite was the most trusted name in news, CNN. Yeah. You know, I mean, you find out the guy's a socialist and it's his voice doing the owl in the Grove out west, you know. So they ought to call it the Brohemian, not Bohemian, but Brohemian Grove.
Yeah.
So that's what they do. They try to trip people up. They take our time, and of course the end product, the final product of it, is to basically demonetize us in a roundabout way.
So, you know, I'm looking at your bio here, and I should have read this when I brought you in, but we wanted to get right into that stuff. You were such a Renaissance man, Guard. It's truly amazing. When I look back at your experience here, TV scriptwriter, journalist, syndicated radio host. You lecture on political economics. You've been involved in Star Trek as well as The Outer Limits and all the rest of the stuff that we all watch. You're out there writing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, of course, novels. And you're working on a novel right now, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Boy, you made my day, David. You know, I've been really sick and I've been sitting in front of the computer sometimes with like the fever trying to get through the novel. I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep going. Yeah, I had a bunch of novels novels and novellas that were supposed to have been published by a publishing company out in California. And then when the pandemic came along, well, first what happened was one of the major figures at it almost went blind. He's a really good guy.
Wow.
So I just waited and they had to take a lot more time. And then the pandemic came and they said, oh, let's wait. Let's not put these out. I had a different opinion. I thought, you know, I think it would be really good to get these out because people are at home and they might want something to read, you know, but there was nothing I could do about it. And so I've never really gone with like trying to get a large agent or anything for my prose fiction. And I really should try to get an agent and, you know, go down to New York and try to go to some of the big industry meetings and get somebody who, you know, can get my stuff out to like Tor and especially fantasy type stuff. But
You really should do that. You should use a pseudonym, though, because you're probably on there.
Well,
they probably got writer guard as well as news guard, election guard, and the rest of the stuff.
I can see it now. Everybody returning my books backwards. You know, maybe I go to the Mises Institute and say, "Hey, Ryan, can I get some in your next book?" But it's interesting because I actually did decline a contract from another publisher. For horror, it was a mid-range publishing company, and the reason I declined it was because they had sent me the contract, and then I got an email from their PR woman. Like the next day, I was just starting to look at the contract, and she said, "So I'm wondering about what you're going to do about your name." Huh. And I'm looking at this, I'm reading down a little further, and she says, "Well, you know, we're looking forward to working with you, and you know, we'll have to come up with a name that we can promote on your books rather than your political work." So they were looking at my Twitter and my other releases online, and they were saying, "Oh, that's a liability for you." What she probably didn't realize was that I probably would attract more people to the books from my political stuff because that's really where I'm known.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been really tough. So right now I'm going through some things. Everything is connected. All the work I'm working on is all part of a larger mosaic. And I'm trying to attract people who are sort of like fans of the H.P. Lovecraft stuff. And then in the end, bring a lesson about logos and Jesus, and try to explain to people like, look, you don't get the material world from anything other than something from God. You don't get the physical from anything except metaphysics.
Yeah, that's great.
And so I've got a couple things that are in the pipeline now. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll dedicate one to you, sir. It'll be a good thing.
If you're going to go from H.P. Lovecraft to Jesus, maybe call it Post Tenebras Lux, right? After darkness, light. It is tough when you're out there and you speak and you know, I understand why they said that's a sad commentary on the world that we live in now. You know, you got to hide your politics. You've got an article about John Cleese, and of course, you know, he's not immune from this kind of stuff. Rowan Atkinson is not immune from it, and he's spoken out on it as well. An article about the life of Brian Line that they're giving them all kinds of problems. It's not over mocking Jesus and the blasphemy.
I know. I know. You got a movie. I know. It, you know, you got to hand it to the Monty Python guys. They, you know, as frustrating as it was when I was a kid and I saw that they were sort of, you know, they're mocking the New Testament, they did it in that indirect way so they could kind of get away with it. And, it's not Jesus we're mocking, it's Brian that we're mocking. Oh, I see. Right. Okay, yeah. Fine. Yeah. You know, but yeah, that opening line where Eric Idle's character says, I want to be a woman. I want to have babies. And John Cleese is like, well, you're a man. You can't have babies. You don't have a uterus. Where are you going to put it, in a shoebox? And he says, it's my right as a man to be a woman.
Way ahead of their time, were they?
And so I know.
And of course, I guess, you know, they did have some members who were of that tribe.
Grim Chapman.
Yeah, we look at it now and it was like, I saw that and it was just like kind of cringy. And I thought, that's so cringy and strange. It's like the lumberjack thing, you know? And
yes.
It's like, that is so strange. I was completely oblivious to that whole subculture there at the time. I just thought, why are they doing that? But he has been outspoken in terms, even though we don't agree with him on many things, you know, that'd be religious or other things like that. Certainly he and Rowan Atkinson understand just how dangerous this whole censorship thing is. And of course, for them, it puts them out of business because nobody can crack any jokes about anything. Everybody's got to be on edge about everything and nothing is funny because they themselves are the joke, right?
It's crazy. And, you know, I think it's interesting. Maybe it's just, you know, my aging as my skin becomes seasoned like tough leather. You know, I find a great satisfaction in seeing some of these people that I admired for their wit. Now I admire them for their wisdom or their courage. Yeah. And it's just terrific. And, you know, it's like with the book thing, you know, I said, you know, why would I do that? And someone's like, well, it's a simple thing. Why not just change it? I was like, because it's my name.
Yeah.
I mean, why? My parents gave me this name. What are you, an idiot? That's insane. Why would I do that? You know, it's like you live. This is it. Like, you don't back off on principle. Well, otherwise, why be alive?
It made me angry when I would see people on YouTube during the vaccine stuff, and they would say, you know, I'm going to talk about the thing. You know what I'm talking about here? That thing, you know, I can't say it on YouTube, but the thing. And it's like, just say it and let them cancel you. Don't censor yourself. If they're going to censor you, that's bad enough. But it's even worse when you censor yourself to try to get on their platform. They're just going to shadow ban you or do other things like that anyway. And so that was something that always bothered me. And, you know, and so I certainly understand why you would not want to use a pseudonym in order to appease the gods of the publishing houses.
The time is coming, David, you know, and I'm really looking forward to it that, you know, as you know, I've been real sick and it sort of feels like you've been in a box. You know, I've got the writing, you've got all these things coming and, you know, been slowly building things. And your listeners have been amazingly supportive for what I've been doing on the political stuff. As you know, I'm not full time with MRC TV. I'm just on contract with them. I do a certain number of pieces per week, a certain number of videos per week. And then I have other things like teaching and things like that. And the fiction part of it has been so important. And you feel like you're in the corral and you're just ready to go, you know?
Yeah.
So there'll be some good things coming down the line. And I'm really looking forward to being able to talk to people about it when everything's all set and I can feel comfortable and say, yeah, I'm giving something good to people. I'll be happy with that.
That's great. I know you don't have a problem with writer's block, but you've been having a lot of problems with nasal block this last week. And so, yeah, people pray for Gard. He's been really sick this. We're going to have him on earlier, but he was sick with that. Before we run out of time, let's talk a little bit about where people can find you. Liberty Conspiracy. Oh. Tell us the platforms, the best ways for people to find your content there. Of course, you're on MRC TV. You're on Liberty Conspiracy. You're on Substack. Tell us all the different places and the best ways for people to connect up with you.
Right on. Okay. Well, if people want to find me Monday through Friday, except for tomorrow night, I won't be able to do it, over at Rockfin. Thanks to the Rockfin folks, and thanks to me because I was able, you asked me to fill in for you. The Rockfin people were very amenable. Rockfin, the Liberty Conspiracy Live at 6 o'clock every Monday through Friday. Also, my Substack, it's just Gardner Goldsmith Substack, and people can check out my work there. On Twitter, I'm at Gard Goldsmith, and on Gab, it's Gardner Goldsmith. Mm-hmm. And if they want to find some fiction that I've already got out there right now, they can find my fiction at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble. I would recommend there's a short novella that's called Bite, which is sort of like Kolchak the Night Stalker. Oh. And there's another one, yeah, there's another one called Fishing, which is very dark. There's some very violent stuff in there, so it's not recommended for younger teens in particular. And also another one called Wall, which is sort of crypto-archaeological stuff. And other than that, I would just say if people want to also maybe go to Rumble, look for the Liberty Conspiracy channel there as well. We're looking for people. And we just got to 1,000 followers on Rockfin. So great. Please help out and spread the word. And yeah, you know, it'd be great stuff. And Rumble, thanks.
And you're on Rockfin, and people can go to Amazon or other places, search for your name to find the books. You also had a novel, Live Free or Die. Going out.
So yeah, well, actually, Live Free or Die is an interesting combo. It's my nonfiction collection of articles along with a script that was never produced from The Outer Limits.
Wow.
And if people are familiar with Prometheus, they'll recognize a scene that's actually very similar to Prometheus that came a few years before that.
Wow.
And so
always ahead of the curve. Gard Goldsmith, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on. That's
Joe, we've got a problem.
Who are you?
It's the new mug they're selling at thedavidknightshow.com, right? So, basically, a mug is something that holds liquid, right? Because basically you can't hold coffee with your hands, right?
I'm it's Scantley, but anyone tries to mug me, I'm be ready for it. You dog-faced pony soldier?
They say the mug can help patriots drink coffee, then save the world. This could be bad for us.
Save the world? But we own the world. These people, they're supporting free speech with every mug they buy. Come on. These people, I tell you, well, anyway.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.